Welcome to the MS News Today podcast. I'm your host, Jen Powell, and I also have secondary progressive multiple sclerosis. I am a columnist with MS News Today at multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com. Thank you all for listening to this podcast. Let me invite you to join our MS forums. We have over 1,000 active members discussing common themes and sharing their experience on living with multiple sclerosis. Please consider joining. You can find the link to the MS News Today forums in this episode's description. Welcome to the Multiple Sclerosis Podcast. I am your host, Jen Powell. Joining us today once again is Jeremiah Robison. Jeremiah Robison is the founder and CEO of Psionic, an innovative company that builds lightweight and durable bionic clothing driven by powerful algorithms that adapt in real time to each individual's mobility needs. He started the company in 2018 after his daughter was diagnosed with cerebral palsy, and he was frustrated at the lack of effective technology available to help improve her mobility. 4 years later, Psionic introduced the breakthrough FDA-cleared Psionic NeuroSleeve, the first product to combine sensing analysis and augmentation into a wearable garment. Prior to Psionic, Jeremiah spent roughly 20 years at the intersection of data, algorithms, and the human body, driving innovative in sensing and machine learning at Apple, OpenWave Systems, Slide, and Jawbone. Jeremiah has a BS and MS in computer science from Stanford University. Welcome back, Jeremiah.
Jen, thank you so much for having me today.
Well, it's wonderful to have you back. Last time you were with us, we spoke about the then recently cleared FDA-cleared Psionic NeuroSleeve, and that was quite a momentous, joyful occasion, and I remember it well because it happened on my birthday, March 8th. Can you tell our listeners who don't currently know about the NeuroSleeve and its functionality in relationship to multiple sclerosis?
Yeah, so we built the Psionic NeuroSleeve really for patients across the upper motor neuron disease spectrum. So multiple sclerosis, post-stroke, cerebral palsy, and spinal cord injuries. And what it does is it actually uses functional electrical stimulation to elicit muscle contraction. And the functional part of it is it is timed with your activity. So for example, to help someone with gait, whether that be a foot drop related or a taxic gait, what it does is actually stimulates the muscles at the right time to elicit a contraction to help with a more normative gait pattern, reducing fatigue, reducing risk of falls, and helping people endure with endurance and participation in their activities of daily living.
And what is the primary difference between the FES so many of us are accustomed to and the NeuroSleeve?
Yeah, so there's a number of different incarnations of functional electrical stimulation, everything from something that may be just a box that is used in physical therapy where a clinician will have two buttons and they'll be walking behind the clinician. There's one that is used with my daughter quite a lot. And the clinician is responsible for pressing the buttons to elicit the contractions, obviously limited to two muscles, limited to observability of what is possible with them. Now, what we've done is sort of address three different challenges with functional electrical stimulation, with the target of it being used all day in individuals' lives. So first is there's no clinician there with you and you're going out and doing your work or your or you're shopping or you're hiking. And so we needed it to be powered by algorithms and not by observation. And so we have sensors that can sense two aspects of movement. One is the orientation of the limbs in space. So how the a lower leg and upper leg are moving, and we can use that to drive stimulation. And then we can also sense muscle firings themselves. So the electrical signal that is being sent from the brain out to the muscle, we can measure that as well. And so with those two sensing technologies, we can then apply algorithms that know exactly when to fire those movements and also when to turn them off, right? So, you know, a lot of the challenges that people have is, well, it's stimulating me when I don't want it to. So that's that, you know, so that was the first big challenge. The second is really around placement of electrodes, right? A lot of times getting the electrodes exactly placed so that it elicits the right muscle contraction, that it's balanced, that it's comfortable. What we decided to do was use an array of electrodes so that we could use software to steer the stimulation rather than having someone have to physically move those electrode pads. And that really showed benefit within our clinical studies, where we were able to help not just with dorsiflexion, that's common with foot drop patients, but also inversion, eversion. So by steering the electrode, we could both lift the foot and then turn it so that it was a nice, stable footfall. And then the third thing is really just like, is this something I want to wear every day? And we talk about, you know, we might be out in the world and doing, doing our thing. You know, is it a big bulky thing that looks like a prison bracelet, or is it something that wears like a garment? And we're really pushing on that edge of something that feels aspirational, that is comfortable, that can be worn all day long.
I can appreciate that as a person with multiple sclerosis. We don't count ourselves out of being a human being with wanting to fit in, wanting to be comfortable, wanting to not have a bulky device and be limited to certain aspects of what we can wear, where we can go. So I can appreciate the myriad of aspects and thought processes put into this, because it's more than just a functional device. It's applicable and helpful to someone in their daily life, making them feel good while they're able to help with mobility. You know, as a woman, that's very comforting. You know, I'm okay to say I'm vain with that. And it's good, you know, it's okay. I think as a human being, we can't count that out. You know, I can appreciate that. You're taking the neural sleeve one step further, no pun intended, to practical application again for people with MS, with Psionics Center of Excellence program. What is the Center of Excellence?
The idea behind the Center of Excellence was really, how do you combine what is great about the psionic neural sleeve in terms of technology with what is great about your physical therapy and your clinical team, and combine those into an operation where we did our first clinical Center of Excellence with Shirley Ryan Ability Lab, one of the best, if not the best, rehabilitation hospital in the country. And so what they have always prided themselves is their expertise in bringing the best set of technologies to the individuals, and also really having a deep and personal relationship with these patients over time. So now we bring in our new technology, something that can be used at home, that can be observed by our technicians, and we combine those together so that you have physical therapist and clinician observability and our all-day wearable stimulation technology. And we're training their therapists. We are holding clinics there so that people who aren't even patients of Shirley Ryan can come in and experience the technology and get both a clinical opinion and our technology opinion and decide if it's right for them, and then tune that over time, right? Because as you use the psionic neural sleeve, you are going to change in your own capabilities. And that allows the clinicians to observe it over time and make adjustments. And so we really wanted to bring the best of the clinical with the best of the technology together in one center for the good of the patients.
I can appreciate that, having recently had a knee replacement, having my own mobility and my walking change, having a whole new set of physical therapists and a new gait if you will. So things do change, and it's nice to know that you are vested in recognizing that the functionality of a device has to follow that as we either progress with MS or change our gait from any other aspect of life. You are quoted as saying, "Psionic endeavors to exceed the expectations of human capability and change the lives of people with mobility differences and the lives of their loved ones by helping them move with greater confidence and independence." Jeremiah, what I've always admired about you is you have a genuine interest in helping those with mobility issues. Does your personal dedication help to motivate and inspire you to push further? And maybe for those who aren't listening or who didn't listen to our prior podcast, can you let them know a little bit about your personal endeavor?
Yeah, absolutely. I love this question, and I think about it a lot. So when I started Psionic, it was really motivated by my daughter's experience with cerebral palsy, another upper motor neuron condition, but a one-time brain injury, usually at birth, as opposed to MS, which is a degenerative neurological condition. So, you know, at a very early age, we see her missing milestones, and we were scared, right? Like any parent would be, and not understanding what would happen. And so many people will tell you what is not possible. As technologists, we're like, what impossible? We make the impossible possible every day. I was having a conversation with an MS advocacy group, and I said, look, my personal motivation is incredibly high. I want for my daughter to be able to live independently, to enjoy the activities that she wants to do, to not be othered, which is also something that is very common. But this is an incredibly intellectually interesting challenge. So you have this personal motivation, but also this fascination with what is considered limitations within human physiology, within disease and study, and say, well, you know what, maybe more is possible. And if we can enable that for my daughter and enable it for all of the people who are facing limitations, right? Like we think about, as someone who is neurotypical, my ability to just even walk across the street to go on these adventures, and having someone say, you can't do that. And you say, like, you shouldn't even want to try to do that. It's like, no way. Like, if you want to, let's try to see if we can make it happen. And now that we have customers out in the wild, right? And we go to like hundreds of customers out in the wild using it. The amount of effort that they will go to should be mirrored by the amount of effort we will put in to make it successful for them. And I think that's so often missed in medical technologies is, y'all are our consumers. Like, this is like, if Apple's like, oh, I just have to make the insurers happy, well, you'd have not a very interesting product. But, you know, this is a consumer who has desires, who has a journey that they're on. And I was just delighted to participate in that. And, bringing it back, delighted to see the results that it has, with my daughter and other loved ones.
You have a passionate reciprocity with what you do and who is the beneficiary of your product. I feel that, I see it, and I recognize it in the effort you put into it. And that's very profound and rare. And in anyone living with any kind of neurodegenerative disease or anything that inhibits our ability to have mobility issues or walk or anything, that's very welcome. I think we are often told what we can't do. And unfortunately, many believe that. And I think having someone on your side fight that is very comforting. I, for one, am right there with you and a believer in finding out what's possible. Because for everything that becomes impossible, I'm going to find something that's possible, and I'm glad you're there to help. I want to talk more about the Center of Excellence. I want to talk about how people can find out more about this, because it's not only at the Shirley Ryan Lab in Chicago. That is only one of among several. Can you tell me about others that are happening around the country?
Yeah, so Shirley Ryan is our first clinical center of excellence. And, you know, we are using that experience as a template to open other regional centers. So what's the goal of regional? So Shirley Ryan is in Chicago, big center in the Midwest, but it's a destination center for a number of people there. So one of the goals for each of these centers of excellence is that they're able to take outside patients for demos and trials, right? That's an important aspect of it. Is some people just, they need to try it before they buy it. Now we have set up our pricing model in such a way to make it really easy. So if someone wants to try it at home, they can do that as well. But sometimes it's just great to be in a place with people who can do this hands-on. You know, the second piece is a real investment in learning the technology themselves as a clinical partner, right? These are the experts on treating, rehabbing these conditions, but they're not necessarily yet experts on the technology. So there's a big training program in place to train their staff to be able to have as much success as one of our trained experts can. And so those two things together are of critical importance. So right now, we do only have that one center in Chicago, and now we're exploring with different folks, different hospital organizations across the country, with the goal of opening 5 this year in various locales that can support our growing community.
Can you tell me about, I think frequently we discuss how you see practical application on an individual with multiple sclerosis. What have you seen with the physical therapists? I would love to hear about an experience you've had with a physical therapist, or you've heard someone who's just been incredibly impacted by how the NeuroSleeve has affected their clientele or patients.
Yes, I will start with the immediate bias that I grew up with. My mother as a physical therapist. She was a spine therapist, small business owner, and she was an entrepreneur and a caregiver. One thing that I think I can say is true about every physical therapist I meet is the care that they have for their patients, what they want for them. You know, they're going to fight hard, and they're the front line. And so times we have physical therapists who are maybe a little bit skeptical. My patient wants to try this. I don't know anything about you guys. And, you know, the amount of people who are trying to sell things to consumers with conditions and like this, you know, it's good. They're like advocates for their patients. And so they'll often say, can you tell me a little bit more? Can you come in and give a demonstration? And what's really incredible, so we just were out up in Washington this last week, and 4 different patients, all very different levels of mobility, all MS. But everything from, you know, extremely limited mobility and use of the leg to someone who's, you know, just get issues with fatigue. So it's a spectrum, right? And what one of the therapists said is, she was just, I'm amazed at the flexibility of the system to be able to treat patients across that spectrum. And that was really validating for us, because that's where we've put the effort. We want it to, as I said before, you know, we'll put in the effort to be able to address as much of the population as possible. And, you know, we want to even have it work for people who are totally immobile and we're just able to start to get exercise and build strength, all the way up through people who are really trying to really extend and push what is possible. And we have some people who said, well, I'd like to get back to running again. I was like, okay, I'm gonna, like, you know, grip my table a little bit. Like, I want to make that possible for you. And that just, you know, that flexibility to address and customize the program such that everyone can be successful is really where we push, and then what I think shines through when we talk to the clinical care community.
Absolutely. I in watching videos too of people wearing this garment and seeing their face light up at the ability to do everything from wiggle their toes to walk, and even walk more fluidly is incredible. And when I look at the garment, when I'm reading about the garment, the psionic neurosleeve, are there 24 sensors? Please correct me if I'm wrong. How many sensors are there on the neurosleeve?
Yeah, so the 24 number is the number of electrodes, and and we basically have four muscle groups, each with an array, a 2x3 array of electrodes. Now, those electrodes can both sense muscle firing, but also stimulate muscles. And it's a really flexible system insofar as they're not discrete electrodes, meaning if we time slice, you know, basically modulate how much time one electrode pair is on versus another, we can create a steerable field of stimulation. And so we have a high degree of possible stimulation patterns. Also taking into account the EMG sensors. And then we also have orientation sensors that sense the orientation of the lower leg and the upper leg. So when you use a product, there's a little skeleton that walks along with you, and it's actually tracking to your body. And that allows us, the system, to optimize the timing parameters as the user is walking. So it's a robust set of sensors and stimulation that is really, you know, I want to say the team has done an amazing job of integrating those in a way that still from the outside, it looks very much like a garment from a wearability standpoint. You know, maybe we're not quite to Lululemon, but we're like getting there.
Well, from what I've seen, you're pretty synonymous. And from what exists today to what you provide is Lululemon to me. So I'm good with that. Does the garment learn along with the wearer about what their mobility is like? And then does it also help with neuroplasticity, which is helping the nerve start to relearn?
So the first question, our algorithms are designed to adapt to an individual's movement over time. And so, you know, if a patient is maybe using a rollator to start and then progresses to walking sticks and then maybe eventually to no assistive devices and then back again, right? It's a progressive disorder. You sort of have these ebbs and flows. And so that, you know, from the first answer, the first question is, yes, our system is learning. And over time, we're going to add more intelligence and more activities. The second question is a little bit harder to answer around neuroplasticity insofar as we haven't run a large enough study across enough time to sort of point to definitive results. But I'll offer a couple of anecdotes, which I think are really interesting, both on the lower end of mobility, where we're starting individuals out and we're not actually getting as much activation as we feel we need. We start them on a program of exercises through the app that allow them to build up both tolerance, because stimulation can be a new and interesting feeling. And oftentimes people have atrophy of their muscles. And so we've got to build up a little bit of strength. And so we've had people who have, I wouldn't say that they've built up neuroplasticity yet, but they've built up strength, and that the combination of their brain, their muscle, and our stimulation system have improved their mobility such that then we can progress into walking. So, you know, that's one example. Now, we have a few patients who have been, a few users who've been with us for over a year now in our trials, and some of them have progress. One individual in specific who, when she came to us, she had no voluntary dorsiflexion, no ability to move her foot on her own or to provide the stimulation. It was like you said, like the face lights up and it was tears. It's emotional to see both for her and for us, the joy of movement. Now, a year later, she went back to work, which is really exciting. She is moving now without any assistive cane. And she is to the point where it was like, maybe you don't need to wear the sleeve every day. And you know, she has built up a new capability and a new capability to move her body in the way that she wants to move it. That was in collaboration with the sleeve. And so obviously neuroplasticity and rebuilding pathways is kind of the holy grail of this field. It's what makes FES so exciting is that you're not going to build anything new if you hard brace a foot, right? You're not going to build any new pathways. You can be out and be mobile, and that is important too. So I don't want to like sell that short. Being out and mobile in the community is always important. But that's the exciting part about FES is that you can build strength, you can build new signaling pathways, and then you can grow independence even without the dependency on the sleeve, which would be really exciting for us and for our users.
Absolutely. And how can people learn more about both the NeuroSleeve and the centers of excellence that may occur throughout the next year or so?
Yeah, the easiest thing to do is to go to psionic.com/trials, and there's a bunch of sign-up options there. As we bring on new centers of excellence, we communicate those out in our newsletter, so join our newsletter and follow along. And we're always providing updated information, both about what we're seeing with our sleeves, with our clinical partners, and also generally in the community of neurorehabilitation, which I am excited to say a lot more people are investing in now. And that's exciting for me, exciting for my daughter. And, you know, I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg of what is possible.
Do you mind if I ask how your daughter's doing for our listeners who care? And I know that
she's doing great. It's been an exciting couple of weeks. I was just mentioning to you earlier today that my daughter went on outdoor ed, and yeah, it's basically a camping trip. They went out and camped at Pinnacles National Park and in the rain. And you know, this is always a bit of anxiety I have in when she goes outside of the, you know, her normal controlled environments where she's comfortable, and where we can't be there, and especially when it involves physical activities in uncertain environments. And you know, I'm overjoyed to say that she came back happy, and she came back telling me all of the stories of her trip. And I'm really proud of our school. She goes to a school here in San Francisco that really invests energy in inclusivity. And, you know, they've actually changed the DEI acronym to IDEA, inclusivity, diversity, equity. And, you know, what is been a process, right? You know, one of the things that's really interesting about San Francisco as a metropolitan area is a very low percentage of young people with disabilities. And so while our school has always been active in other areas of inclusivity, accessibility, that A part, IDEA, accessibility is new. But they made sure that their teachers were aware, that they had a plan, and that they adapted, you know, accessibility and adaptation, such that the activities that she was most delighted to participate in, she got to do more of. And I think it came away with her saying, you know, yes, my experience was different than the other kids, but it was very joyful. And I was active. And that's the thing that we're so excited about. We don't want to set them out and other them in a way that they feel like they're not capable or that they're holding people back. And that's another thing I hear, you know, from my daughter, like, I don't want to hold my friends back, right? Okay, well, we want you to be there. We want you to we of course don't want her to feel that way, but to have an environment where people are finding ways to make joy happen and make joy happen with movement, I think is critical for anybody who is has a child with a mobility need.
I'm emotional. Just I want you to know that even though you're speaking about your daughter, you're speaking about so many of us adults that don't want to hold people back or have fears. I think we have so much more in common than we do differences, all of us, that struggle with immobility or a neurodegenerative or any kind of neurological struggle, as you can tell as I try for my words. But the passion you have is so appreciated, Jeremiah, and what you have done and you and your colleagues have done for the world is a huge leap forward, and we are grateful for you.
We're grateful for you, for our community. I mean, it's easy to get fired up about this stuff because our community is telling us that it's working for them and that they want this experience and that they want to help us in any way that they can. I mean, we're like, you know, we're still working on state licensure in a few states that have longer processes than others. And it's like, well, can I go
What's
and like,
that about? Tell me about that. What's that about?
So as a home medical device, you have to have certain licensure to be able to distribute directly to users. And most medical device companies, again, talking about sort of the relationship with the users, they don't do it. They give it to a distributor who will then sell it and have the relationship with the customer. We knew that wasn't going to work for us. We needed to have that direct relationship with the user, be able to and sort of care for their journey with the sleep. And so, you know, there's the FDA regulatory of getting it approved, but then you have to be licensed in every different state to be able to ship. And some states are easy insofar as when we passed our licensure in California, they just did a reciprocal license in our states. Others demand more time and more process. And so, you know, some of them have taken longer than others, and our users, yeah, they're frustrated. They want this experience that they're seeing from hearing about from others, but they're also, you know, like, I want to go. I'll go down and I'll like knock on the doors of our, you know, of the regulatory office. Just let me know. And it's like, that's passion, and that is yeah. So we can't thank that community enough for that passion to drive us forward.
How can we learn more about knocking on doors of states that aren't allowing this? Where can we learn more? I'm a door knocker, but I'm in California. But I also
yeah,
know,
there you go.
Feel like to not have this accessible to me would be very frustrating. And how can we be part of the change? How can we help?
So I'd say save your knocking, because we're going to need it later. And where we're going to need it is when we go to the payers, right? I mean, with these regulatory bodies, it's time. We file the applications. They take their time. I don't know that, you know, that we can move them any faster. They're not saying no. They're just saying, well, we've got a 20-day backup, or we've got a 2-month backup, or here's this other form you have to fill out. So, you know, it just feels very much like time that we, and putting in the time and going through the process. But when it comes to reimbursement for these products, obviously there's a level of communicating to the clinical teams and then through the clinical teams or with in conjunction with the clinical teams to the payer. This is working for me. I need this. Here's the results that it's having. And fighting not just for each individual, but for the community as a whole to get widespread coverage. If we can get widespread coverage, we can get this to so many other people. Like it, you know, we do our best to build it at a price point that, you know, works for people. But at the same time, we know how much money is just spent living with MS, right? And so, you know, that save your advocacy, save your knocking for when that time
we'll
comes,
be here when you're ready.
We'll activate the people.
Love it. And as we close, what message would you like to leave our listeners?
I think about this a lot. And my ask is to tell your story, right? One of the things that I think is really hard And I see this with my daughter, and I see this with other loved ones, is there is there's a loneliness that comes from feeling like her experience is the only experience like this, and not knowing that there are other people out there who are experiencing the same thing and who will fight for her and for others. And what I love about the MS community is you guys are already there. I mean, you are already telling your stories. You already have great advocacy, and you're fighting for each other. But keep doing it, because the more high profile people that says that this is not, it's not the end of my journey that I have an MS diagnosis. This is just the beginning. It's just part of my life, and that I can go and do everything that people said I can't, that my daughter can go and do all the things that they say, like, don't make any plans for her. And what are you talking about? Like, we're going to make tons of plans and we're going to do amazing things. And it is part of the journey, and that she's not alone. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, thank you for that. It's powerful. And like I said before, it goes across anyone who's coping with any kind of mobility or neurological or neurodegenerative issue. And Jeremiah Robinson, thank you so much for joining us today. I look forward to our next chapter together.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you. I look forward to the next one as well.
And links to Psionic and information about the NeuroSleeve and the Center of Excellence will be on this episode's description. And thank you to our listeners at Multiple Sclerosis News Today. This is the Multiple Sclerosis Podcast, and I am your host, Jen Powell. Share your thoughts on this episode through social media. You can find MS News Today on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Follow us to keep updated on the latest news and to never miss new content and initiatives. Click the links in this episode's description.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to Multiple Sclerosis News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com.